soup. The clouds above the wreckage had faded once more to a dull, solemn gray. Shaky and spent, she sat against the rock and let out a heavy sigh. Aero hadn't been the target, and neither had she, or Ace of Spades for that matter. She brought her hands up to rub her face, but when gloves hit helmet, she let out a sharp laugh. The lines of sweat rolling down her skin created a near-maniacal need to rip off her suit and wipe those feathery, itchy lines away. But as much as she wanted to, she had no desire to be flash-frozen like the land around her. So she glanced skyward again. Whatever ship had been there before was probably long gone. There was nothing to salvage, no reason to send a landing party. The damage was done. Cowards. No respectable salvager would destroy a perfectly good and profitable wreck. Salvagers had a code, a shaky, unspoken one, but a code nonetheless. An honor system most of them lived and worked by. Firing on someone else's claim, obliterating it, putting lives in danger, even killing to get the best scraps. That might have been how things were done during the Covenant War and its immediate aftermath. But that was then, a time when the entire galaxy was in a constant state of flux, when planets and colonies were emerging from the wreckage and rebuilding, when governments began taking shape once again, when chaos and power grabs were a common enough occurrence. During the war, and in the early post-war days, salvagers were a crazy bunch, Rion included. It had been a free-for-all, ruled by the fastest and most heavily armed. But over the years, and after a few sobering displays of violence, most salvagers had come to their senses and begun working with more civility. There was plenty of scrap to go around. The war had seen to that. There were only a few groups she could think of that would want the Roman blue and all it contained gone, to remain a ghost ship forever. Its makers, for one, the UNSC. Oni, for another. Nothing else made much sense. The chance that this was about some other salvager's attempt at personal revenge was slim. Rion had made her share of enemies, had beaten rivals to scrap enough times that more than a few of her competitors held deep grudges. But a true salvager wouldn't destroy the goods in the process. Leaning forward, elbows resting on her knees, she checked her comm pad. 52 minutes of oxygen left. The wreckage had begun to cool, parts of it already becoming glass, black, jagged smears on the snowy surface of the moon. Finding that link to her father, and then having anything else she might have found immediately ripped away. Talk about being sucker-punched. And as much as she wanted to move forward and make tracks, it was too soon to break silence. While chances were small that the attacking ship was still around, she wouldn't run the risk quite yet. Ace would never stand against an enemy that could do the damage she'd just witnessed. And if Rion lost the Ace of Spades, she might as well throw in the towel and sell chatterboxes from a kiosk in a mall somewhere on Earth. Ace of Spades was more than a ship. It was her workhorse, her home, her sanctuary. Above all, it was her escape, her means to leave whenever she wanted to leave, to fly, to hunt, to explore. The universe was hers to navigate because of that ship, and she'd be damned if she'd ever let anything change that. So she sat, and she waited. 4. Aero, Ectanus 45 System. As the Ace of Spades descended to Rion's location, she pushed to her feet with 10 minutes of oxygen to spare. Watching her ship always made her pause. While Mariner-class vessels were designed to operate with a small crew and carry a large payload, they were also things of beauty, fierce, fast, menacing, and sleek. And with the black ablative coating on the hull, her ship had taken on an even darker edge. The coating was an expensive splurge and required regular maintenance, though it was rare that Ace, unlike military vessels, was fired upon or scratched enough to require consistent refinishing. The small number of private firms now producing civilian-grade stealth technology charged an arm and a leg. But if there was money in the bank, Rione usually sprang for any tech that would give them an edge. And in this case, the price was worth every credit because it allowed Ace to engage in more delicate salvage ops. Ace's thrusters should have stirred up a small blizzard around her, but everything was frozen solid from the plasma melt and refreeze. She had already spoken briefly over comms, but other than a quick update with the crew, she'd remained silent, not ready to chat or delve into details. As irritating as her suit and itchy skin had become, she had needed the time on Aero to gather her thoughts and let events sink in. One small chip, and everything was about to change. As the ramp descended, there was no mistaking the man waiting to disembark, despite the cold suit and helmet he wore. While Rione could only see her reflection in Cade's visor as she approached, she knew that behind the tempered glass composite there was probably a very pissed-off ex-Marine, one who was hardwired to never leave a crew member behind. Cade paused in front of her, taking in her charred suit and damaged helmet. His deep voice broke through the low hum of audio static. "Suit looks like shit, Forge." Then he turned and headed back up the ramp. Yep, he was pissed. On more than one occasion, the two had nearly come to blows about her tactics. But ultimately, in the end, it was her ship. And when it came to making sure Ace was safe, there was no one she'd ever ask to stay behind but herself. "We're in," Rione said, removing the straps to her gloves with quick, jerky movements as the ramp came up. The airlock engaged. She ripped the gloves off and let them drop to the floor. "Get us out of here." Her helmet joined the discarded gloves. As Cade continued to the locker room to desuit, Rione ran her hands and nails all over her itchy face. Instant gratification shot beneath her skin, the relief utterly satisfying. Once that little ritual was over, she picked up the gloves and damaged helmet, then headed after Cade. After tossing the helmet into her locker, she unzipped the cold suit, exposing her damp, sweaty torso to the cool air. She was bruised, too, her muscles already growing stiff. Sitting down, she went for her boots, but the damn strap on the left one had completely melted. "We headed back to Venezia?" Lessa asked over the ship-wide intercom. "No." Rione struggled with the strap. "Nico, I want you to find the nearest comsat. We're going to patch in, boost our search capabilities, and do some digging. Are we clear on radar?" "Not a ship in sight," he answered. "Good. Plot a course, then." Cold suit hanging off him, Cade pulled his knife from his belt, leaned over, and slipped the blade beneath the strap of her boot, slicing it clean. He remained eye level with her for a beat, and she was met with questioning brown eyes. "You good?" he asked. "Fine." He straightened, slid his knife back in his belt, and turned back to his locker, shrugging the rest of the way out of the suit. Her boot finally came free, and she had to bite down the urge to wing it across the room. Once she was down to her flight suit, she shoved her things into her locker. "I'm gonna hit the shower. I want everyone in the lounge in 30 minutes. Under the spray of a lukewarm shower, Rione let her thoughts drift to earlier aboard the Roman Blue. Crawling into the captain's quarters, finding the chip, feeling that great surge of shock and renewed hope when the captain mentioned the spirit of fire. It had been electrifying. But it was only a moment. A short blip in a lifetime of wondering and questioning and searching. There were more than 2 decades of time since that log entry. And now that reality had set in, it seemed impossible that answers might still be out there. The chip might simply be another painful reminder, a tiny crumb on a phantom trail that spanned the entire galaxy. "They're out there, Lucy," her grandfather had often said. It was a phrase repeated in her household 100 times over. She remembered the day those words had been spoken for the last time. From a hospice bed, her grandfather's thin hand tightly wound in hers, the skin cracked and dry like paper, but surprisingly still strong.
"I know he's out there. My boy is out there. You find him and bring him home. Do what the rest of us couldn't."
It was a terrible burden to put on a teenager's shoulders, but even then she'd understood his need. He hadn't meant to lay that task on her. He'd simply wanted assurance, some kind of closure, something to allow him to close his tired eyes, rest easy, and fade away. And when he was gone, Rion was well and truly alone. She'd never been close to her mother, and her Aunt Jillian had left Chicago a few years prior, taking a dream job at some corporate law firm in Sydney. And eventually, that city had become Jillian's tomb. After her grandfather's funeral, Rion had packed her bags and left. Run was more like it. Right to the recruitment center to enlist. She'd walked by the center's front door 3 times in the span of 30 minutes, uncertain and never really getting the sense of rightness that she expected. She was a forge, for God's sake. It should have felt right. Instead, she felt like a fraud. Hell, her father had enlisted when he was 16. No hesitation. Probably burst right through the front door and demanded to be signed up. Yet Rion couldn't muster the nerve. Or the passion. So she headed to the bar down the street, parked herself on a stool near the door, expecting to be kicked out once the bartender got a good look at her, and fought an inner battle with herself. Her reasons were all wrong. She wasn't enlisting because she wanted to do good or save the world or be a hero. So why was she? Why had she gone there? To be close to her father and grandfather, no doubt. By doing what they had done, perhaps she wouldn't feel so utterly alone. "You got ID on you?" the bartender asked. Rion had glanced up at the hard face and sighed. "Yeah, but it'll only get me booted out the door." She slid off the stool and grabbed her pack. "I give the kid a break, Hal." A group of 4 men and 1 woman occupied a booth in the corner by the door. They were a coarse-looking bunch, travel-weary and rough around the edges. "She looks like she could use a drink." Hal shrugged indifferently. "Rules are rules, Bircher." He nodded to the door. "Beat it, kid." "Never mind, Hal. Come join us," the man named Berger called as she hiked her pack over her shoulder. To this day, Rion wasn't sure what made her stop. Maybe it was the look of them. Different, out of place. Not only rough, but capable. Their manner and their eyes held weight and worldliness, like they'd seen and done it all, and had the scars inside and out to prove it. Her feet had moved before her brain had caught up, and she found herself in front of their table. "You look lost, girl," the woman said with a smile and a deep accent Rion couldn't place. She was older, 40s maybe, with gray hair in 2 fat braids, sharp ice-blue eyes, and a strong, striking face. "You running away, then?" Rion gestured in the recruitment center's direction. "Enlisting." Berger laughed. He too was graying, a big, burly giant of a man, his presence equal to his size.
Why enlist when you can sail the starry skies without all the killing and dying?"
"How old are you, child?" he asked, eyes narrowing. 18, she lied.
"I was your age."
He turned to the woman seated next to him.
"Un here was 16.
"When you enlisted?" Rion asked. Berger smiled. "When we..." he pointed to the ceiling. left Mother Earth. There's gold in the stars, if you know where to look. You're pirates, Rione blurted before she could stop herself. They certainly had the look about them. Berger threw his head back and howled with laughter, the sound echoing throughout the bar and probably out into the street. The others chuckled, though Un simply smiled and said, Salvagers, girl, that's where the gold's at.
We're talking credits just floating out there for the taking.
Berger spoke with his hands and his entire body, proceeding to weave a fantastic tale that captured Rion's attention and her heart. Here was the passion she'd been looking for. Adventure, stars, planet after exotic planet. A life spent wandering and trading and bartering. Thoughts of the recruitment center were immediately abandoned, and Rion never looked back. Those first few years on Bjorn Berger's cargo ship Hakon were everything he claimed they would be. Of course, he'd left out the harsh, horrific things. Dodging in and out of war zones posed the potential not only for riches, but for threats unlike anything Rion had imagined. When a situation developed in the middle of nowhere, you couldn't exactly run away. You had to push through, deal with whatever problem loomed. She learned firsthand, and many times, that when things went wrong, they went very, very wrong. Starvation, death, betrayal, torture, you name it. They might have called themselves salvagers, but they sure as hell had acted like pirates. And as time passed, the older the Bergers became, the less control they had over the crew. Their loss meant Rion's safety teetered on the edge. They stopped protecting her, whether they realized it or not. Too old to care, too distracted to see, too disinterested. Or by Un's way of thinking, necessary for Rion's development as a future leader. In the end, Rion had taken matters into her own hands. On her 24th birthday, she killed a man. In the cargo hold, blood on her face and hands as the entire crew looked on, placing bets and eager to shove the loser out the airlock. Her fight with Sorale had been brewing since the day he joined the Hakon. She'd earned a measure of respect that day, and a measure of distance. She'd slept better that night than she had in years. None of it came easy. She'd fought for every scrap, every ounce of respect, and when Berger began to decline, Un had taken Rion into her confidence, and together they began laying the groundwork to maintain control of the Hakon. Keen-minded, sharp-tongued, and quick with knives, Un Berger could have captained the Hakon for years after Bjorn Berger's death. But once he was gone, so was her ambition. And so she bequeathed her knowledge and lifelong advice to Rion. Un had died a year after Berger. Natural causes, ironically. By that time, Rion held complete control of the ship. She could barter and manipulate just like Bjorn, and pilot and wield a knife better than Un. She surrounded herself with those she could trust, and if she had the slightest doubt, they'd be off at the next station. Or if the offense was great enough, the airlock sufficed, and she'd only had to do that once for the rest of the crew to fall in line. Rion shrugged the old memories away as she stepped out of the shower, dried off, dressed, and then made for the lounge. The Ace of Spades was a decent-sized ship, but she wasn't huge on crew space. Most of her volume was reserved for cargo. There were 5 crew quarters, the captain's quarters, a mess lounge combo with observation deck, a med bay with cryo for 8, and a small attached gym with showers. Everything else beneath them was storage space, support systems, and engineering. Rion went right for the food dispenser to retrieve an energy bar and a vitamin and electrolyte-infused water. Lessa was lounging in one of the swivel chairs at the table, smiling at something Kip had said, while Nico stared at Kip with a frown, his brotherly suspicions finally kicking in. For as smart as he was, it had taken Nico a while to pick up on the vibes his older sister was throwing Kip's way. Cade was standing at the observation deck, hands clasped behind his back as he stared out into the black void of space. Rion approached the long table anchored in the middle of the room. "Where are we on the commsat?" she asked Nico. Reluctantly, he withdrew his gaze from Kip. "There's one in this system, around Cairo. You get any readings of that ship before going dark?" "You mean before you had us abandon you?" he asked. "Okay, so make that two people pissed. Possibly four." Rion arched an eyebrow, one that asked Nico if he really wanted to start this fight. He glared at her for 3 petulant seconds before backing down.
"Before we took off," he finally said, "we logged a few readings as our mystery ship broke stealth to fire. More like non-readings. No real signature. Energy levels read like a small tug. I mean, we could have picked up more, but you said to go dark, so..."
Rion released a tired breath. "How many times have we had to go dark to avoid military, or rebels, or fringe?" She waited for someone to answer, but no one did. Her point made. Honestly, she was a little irritated by the general mood in the lounge. "I make the call. And if I can't, Cade does." She glanced at him as he walked to the table. "He'd do the same to protect you and the ship. Without Ace, we have no way home, no way off whatever planet we're on. This ship was meters from the Roman Blue. If you hadn't left when you did, she'd be gone right now, and we'd be freezing our asses off on Aero permanently. Don't any of you ever think I won't make the hard calls. And if that means leaving me behind until it's safe, then that's what'll happen." Every eye in the room went downcast. Except, of course, for Cade's. He shrugged. "Hard to go dark when your captain is in the middle of a plasma beam." "I wasn't in the middle." But she did understand the point. Had it been one of the crew down there, she probably would have gone and done something monumentally reckless. But then again, it was her call to make. "So now what?" Kip asked. "There's no way to track that ship." "We're not going to track it." Their confusion bordered on comical. Even Cade's usually stoic face contorted into a puzzled frown. Rion leaned her hip on the edge of the table and swallowed a bite of her energy bar. Whoever commanded that ship had a job to do, and they did it. The Roman Blue is completely unsalvageable. Lessa frowned. "And aren't we mad about that?"
"Yeah, we're pissed," Rion admitted. "But think about it.
With the kind of stealth Nico was talking about and the firepower they had, this wasn't about us. Who benefits by destroying the Roman Blue? Not salvagers, not smugglers, not any faction I know of."
"Military," Cade answered. "But why would they do that?" Kip sat back in his chair, his expression skeptical. "The amount of heavy ordnance and small arms left on the ship. It doesn't make sense they'd just sacrifice it all." "They would if they wanted the Roman Blue to stay lost," Rion said. "You think they came upon us by chance?" "No, I think we were tagged at some point, to keep an eye on what we'd find. They already keep tabs on Nor and some of the other surplus houses along the trade route. Makes sense they'd tag salvagers, too." And worse yet, rumor had it that military wasn't the only operation guilty of tagging. Fringe groups, marauders, and fragments of whatever was left of the Covenant wanted in on salvager scores as well, letting the pros do all the work and then swooping in to take the payload. 3 crews had gone missing in the last year. And Rion,
along with the rest of the salvagers along the Via Casilina, was beginning to suspect there was a lot of truth to the rumors. Nico grew pale.
There's no way we were tagged.
But his look said he wasn't so sure.
Oh, shit.
He pulled up one of the displays integrated into the table and started running scans.
Wait a minute,
Lessa said, still baffled. If we don't care about that ship, then why are we heading to a commsat? What exactly are we looking for? And damn if that question didn't make Rion's nerves shoot right to the surface. She downed the last of her water in an effort to gain a few seconds of composure. Talking about her past was a rare occurrence, but as of now, it was about to be the driving force for everything to come.
I'll make this as brief as I can.
She drew in a steady breath and set the water down.
You were right before, Kip.
For a very short time, I was a military brat. I come from a very long line of soldiers. My father was a sergeant in the Marines. When I was 5, he was commissioned to a refitted Phoenix-class colony ship called the Spirit of Fire. As she paused, Kip glanced up sharply.
I've heard of that ship. I'm sorry.
Rion nodded her thanks.
Official story says she was lost with all hands. But a lot of us, the other families, never really believed it. We heard so many conflicting reports.
The things my grandfather learned from his military contacts suggest the missing in action designation only changed to lost with all hands because the brass decided we needed closure.
What we needed was the truth.
And for us, until we learn otherwise, the ship remains missing. My father and the other 11,000 plus crew on board remain missing. A heavy weight seemed to settle in the room, and time stretched. Rion's blood pressure had risen with every word, each one simple and concise, but weighted down by an immeasurable amount of history and hurt. Lessa lifted her head, her gaze on Rion, fixed and speculative.
Why are you telling us this now? Because I found something on the Roman Blue, something that might lead me to answers. And I can't turn my back on it. I can't go back to salvaging and jumping the trade routes until I sort this out.
She reached into her pocket and set the chip on the table. Everyone leaned forward.
What's that?
Kip asked.
Answers.
Cade took the chip and inserted it into the table's holo display. They all watched as the holographic list of journal dates appeared.
Go to the last entry,
Rion said quietly. Cade selected it, and they watched the same video journal that had shocked Rion back on Aero. Captain Webb's tired appearance, the defeat in his voice, the utter weight of the war. As Rion watched it again, it left her feeling spent and hollow. When it was over, no one spoke. Then Cade turned to her.
You want that buoy?
Goosebumps spread up her arms.
More than anything. Yeah, I'm going after the Radiant Perception.
I'm going to find that buoy, and I'm going to find out what happened to the Spirit of Fire and her crew.
Is this the part where you say it's personal and you don't expect any of us to come along?
Nico asked with suspicion. You'll drop us wherever we want to go, just say the word, blah, blah, blah. A smile tugged Rion's lips.
I don't expect any of you to come along.
I don't know where this is heading or how long it'll take, and I don't plan on stopping until the trail runs cold.
Silence descended in the lounge as her words sank in.
But you should also know, she continued, a trip like this still has the potential to pay out big.
Radiant Perception was a Covenant vessel, Cade said with a slow grin. Rion returned the grin.
Okay. What are we missing?
Nico glanced between them.
Salvage gold,
Cade replied. Salvage gold.
5. Ace of Spades, Ectanis 45 system, 4 hours from Cairo. Kip, will you pull up a CPV class heavy destroyer schematic? Once the image hovered above the table, Rione explained. During the war, nearly every Covenant vessel carried on board something called a luminary. The device was specifically designed to pick up signals emitted from Forerunner technology. The Covenant was big on finding and using the Forerunner's advanced tech to, as we all know, wipe humanity from the galaxy. Luminaries were key pieces to aid their cause.
How is it I've never heard of one? Nico asked.
From what I've gathered from my digging and from ex-Covenant willing to talk, the Covenant had a pretty rigid protocol. It was called the Writ of Security, Sanctity? Something like that. Either way, it was designed to protect their sacred objects from falling into what they considered unclean hands. The writ ordered the destruction of the luminary aboard any vessel should that vessel be compromised. They'd rather destroy their own tech and ships than let us get a hold of Forerunner artifacts.
So finding one means we'd have our very own Forerunner artifact sniffer, Lessa said, clearly warming up to the idea and its potential.
Nico leaned back and linked his hands behind his head.
Salvage gold. I like it.
And this radiant perception, Kip said. If we do find it. Rione turned off the holo image.
Chances are we won't. Destroyers are like luminaries.
You don't come across them every day. And if you do, they're already in the hands of those who could wipe us off the map.
But if that vessel is out there, or even part of it is sitting in some shipyard somewhere, it's possible we might find a luminary that wasn't destroyed. And I might find my buoy.
It's a big galaxy, Cade said at length.
It is, Kip agreed, slowly shaking his head, a thoughtful expression drawing his brows. When he looked up, Rione was surprised to see possibility in his gaze.
But I swear I never thought I'd see a battlecruiser either, so...
The rest of the crew started smiling, then laughing, and Rione stood there rather shocked that no one had outright bailed on her or even presented the slightest hesitation. She went to the cabinet and pulled out a precious bottle of Alt Burgundy.
I think this calls for a drink.
Cade retrieved glasses, and they toasted to finding answers. Before they took a sip, Nico added, And here's to weeks stuck on the ship with my irritating sister. If it's too long, I'm going in cryo.
2 weeks successfully avoiding my idiot brother, she shot back, and finally having time to finish my Mindirian blanket.
You've been working on that thing for 2 years, Nico said, rolling his eyes. He lifted his glass.
Fine. To finishing the god-awful hairy-ass beast of a blanket.
It's wool, and I'm not going to sleep with it. It's going on the wall. It's decoration. Imbecile.
What about you, Kip? Rione asked.
He thought for a moment, then raised his glass.
Here's to exploring the universe and finding your father.
Amen.
Now that everyone could drink to.
Here. Rione glanced over her shoulder at the sound of Cade's voice. He approached with another glass of Alt Burgundy. The crew had left the lounge some time ago, and Rione had gone to the observation window to think.
Soon Cairo would appear and fill the view with something other than the blackness of space.
She took the offered glass.
Thanks.
Cade remained silent, lurking behind her. At 5'10", she wasn't short by any means, but when Cade came this close, she felt petite. Part of her wanted to lean back and settle against his frame, to steal some warmth, to feel some measure of comfort and stability. But she remained stiff. As warm as the alcohol was going down,
it didn't alleviate her tension.
"That boy is probably long gone," she said after a few moments.
"Or could be the UNSC already recovered it."
If that were the case, Rione hoped she never found out the truth, because if the UNSC had located that buoy and kept secret what happened to her father and the Spirit of Fire, she wouldn't be able to stop herself from doing something foolish.
"More than likely, they never recovered it," she said. "I mean, think about it. At the time, the Covenant was coming through, glassing planets. The military was scrambling, trying to figure out the threat, to survive and save anyone they could.
It must have been a sobering, chaotic time for humanity, and a huge weight on the shoulders of a military tasked with stopping an alien invasion, right on the heels of insurrection within its own colonies. A lost buoy wouldn't have been on anyone's radar, not when it was a struggle just to stay alive. That the buoy still existed at all would be a miracle. But then all manner of things were finding their way back into circulation. In post-war, anything was possible."
Cade moved to stand beside her.
"If the Radiant Perception picked up the buoy, they would have deciphered it if they could."
"Might have gone after your father's ship." In her early days on the Hakon, she'd followed in the wake of UNSC fleets, remained on the edges of one battle after another. She'd witnessed the real damage wrought when two warships came together. If the Radiant Perception had found the Spirit of Fire, the outcome wouldn't have been good.
"A lot could have happened," Cade said when she didn't respond. "In the last 26 years, the possibilities were endless. Even though she'd finally found a mention of her father's ship, Rione was well aware that she was embarking on an impossible mission, an outrageous attempt to find a tiny grain of sand in a galaxy full of stars." She took another sip, welcoming the burn in her throat and the spread of fire through her belly. Some of her stress finally eased, allowing her to lean against Cade's shoulder. He responded by slipping an arm around her back.
"When I learned my family was gone,"
he paused, seeming unsure how to continue. A heavy sigh escaped him.
"Yeah, if there was any doubt, any hint that one of them made it out alive, I'd never stop looking. Never."
More than anyone, Cade understood her drive. And yet she couldn't help the sharp twinge of guilt that came with his words. Because he had lost everyone. And she had not.
"What is it?" he asked.
She gave a slight shrug.
"I still have family. I could be with my mother even now. I could stop all this and go back to Earth. If she's still there."
But she'd opted to run, and to keep on running to the very edge of human-occupied space.
"Instead, I'm out here in the dark, chasing ghosts."
Cade's grip on her tightened, a soft squeeze to tell her that he was on her side.
"You're not one to stay grounded, Forge. A stationary life, it's not for everyone. Out here, it calls to people like us. Calls so hard we walk away even from those we love."
She tossed an unimpressed look his way.
"Is that supposed to make me feel better?"
Because that little nugget of truth only solidified her guilt. His soft chuckle warmed her as much as the last bit of burgundy she'd thrown back.
"Hey, I tried. Was working for a while."
In the end, though, Cade was right. They'd answered the call, and they both had to live with their decisions. Rione knew if she had to do it all over again, she'd still walk away. She'd still answer the call to the stars. She was cut from the same cloth as every other forge who came before her. Her grandfather had often said that forges had wanderlust in their blood. That, and a thirst for adventure. On bad days, when his mind broke, he'd change that last part, too.
a thirst for killing. She'd never had bloodlust, but the wanderlust, that was there in spades. Always on the move, always going, always being pulled. While she had very few memories of her dad, she vividly recalled his restless energy. On leave, he'd be jumpy, like he couldn't quite figure out how to live a civilian life. When his time was up, he was sad to go. But even at her young age, Rion could tell a part of him was relieved to get his feet off the ground and back into the sky. Her mother could tell it, too. Their marriage had been strained since before Rion was born. Neither one could claim the title of perfect spouse. They both had their faults. But sometimes Rion wondered if her mother envied her own daughter, maybe even hated her a little, for all the time and attention John Forge gave to Rion when he was home. "We all have our demons," Cade said, his voice dropping, "and our regrets." She let her head rest on his shoulder. He pulled her close, and Rion's thoughts settled. She and Cade were alike in many ways. The similarities had led them first into friendship, then into bed, and eventually into tumultuous times. Their relationship cycled around those stages like a planet orbiting a star. But always, no matter what, theirs was a deep, abiding friendship. He was her constant, and she was his. And in the confines of a ship in deep space, the reality of having someone you could count on was immeasurable. Six. Ace of Spades, 400,000 kilometers off Cairo. Checking file systems. Done. Checking security. Done. Oni field pad. Login. Security protected. Password. Security protected. Encryption code OCTWTF. Clearance level H. Access granted. To Han. From 67159-021127. Location. Actanis 45. Found. Halcyon class cruiser, Roman Blue on A row. Destroyed by unknown vessel. Note. Was that you? Recovered. Captain's personal log chip mentioning buoy dropped by Spirit of Fire. Date of drop unknown. Date of log, March 10th, 2531. It's assumed the buoy was picked up by Covenant destroyer Radiant Perception near the planet Arcadia. Current, proceeding to Cairo Orbital Comsat to research the whereabouts of the destroyer. Note, Captain Forge is hell-bent on retrieving the buoy. Instructions? Agent 67159-021127 watched the cursor on the datapad blink for approximately 39 seconds. Had it been Oni firing upon the Roman Blue today? If so, why hadn't they waited for Rion to leave the wreckage? Had they wanted her to die? No, that wasn't what they'd told him when he was recruited. They wanted to use her. They'd made that very clear. She was an asset, a successful outer colony salvager who'd made such a name for herself that she warranted keeping an eye on for what she might find. And Rion Forge found a lot of things. The screen lit up. Transmission received. Report next destination. End. 7. Bridge, Ace of Spades, 400,000 kilometers off Cairo. Lessa found Rion on the bridge, sitting at comms, already researching the Radiant Perception. She'd been surprised to learn about the captain's past. Usually, Rion kept a tight lid on her personal life. And for a people person like Lessa, it made her wildly curious. She wanted to know more about the woman who had rescued her and Nico, from what would have been a very short life on Alaria. When Rione had caught her and Nico in the bazaar on Alaria and discovered the truth of what they'd been trying to do, Lessa had been relieved. She was tired of ripping people off, tired of the goddamn heat and never-ending drought, tired of grit always in her eyes and mouth, of avoiding the courier guilds and having to pay a portion of whatever they stole to whatever guild happened to gain control from one month to the next. It was exhausting. And Nico had been changing, becoming more and more like them with every passing day, more reckless, desensitized to violence. She was scared to death of losing him, and scared of being alone. It had been a gamble from the start, targeting Rione. The tall, dark-haired captain moved through the bazaar with a confident presence, sharp eyes scanning the stalls, expression alert and ready, yet relaxed, too, like she'd be just as comfortable shopping the bazaar as she would taking on a direct assault. Lessa envied her. At first, she'd just watched and followed. Owing to the heat, Rione had worn fatigues paired with a black tank top and a pistol strapped to her thigh. The sides of her dark hair had been braided back and tied into a bun. Smart. Lessa knew from experience that having your hair fisted and used as leverage in a fight was never a good thing. Trying to rob Rione Forge had turned out to be the best day of her life. And Rione didn't even know. Well, that wasn't entirely true. She could tell the captain had gotten the gist of things real quick, what their life must be like, and how it most likely would end up had they stayed on Alaria. With a median lifespan of 45 years, Alaria wasn't exactly a hotbed of promise and hope. More like a hot mess of fear and despair. The way Lessa saw it, she owed Rione. So if the captain wanted to search the entire galaxy for her father, then Lessa was game. "I'm sorry about your father," she said, startling Rione from her research. Lessa bit her lip and stared down at a fingernail, picking at it nervously. As much as she loved the crew, none of them were very big on talking. But sometimes a girl just needed to chat. "I don't really remember my parents." Rione turned her full attention to Lessa. "Did they pass away?" "What?" "Your parents. Did they pass away?" "Oh, I don't know. Probably. There's a lot of young parents on Alaria. They go into the mines and never come out. Or they come out sick. Or they go off smuggling. Do you remember him? Your dad?" "I was young, but the memories I do have, yeah, they're crystal clear." "Do you look alike?" As a child, Lessa would always look at faces. In the bazaar, in the mines, in the tent cities. Always looking for a resemblance to Nico or herself. Always wondering whom they belonged to. "My grandfather used to say I was the spitting image of my dad. Only a hell of a lot prettier. When my dad would come home on leave, my grandfather would tease him about it." A grin lingered on her lips as she remembered. "My dad would smile and say the ladies found him pretty enough. They seem like fun people. Fun and loud and argumentative. It was always a whirlwind when my dad came home. A quick whirlwind. And then it went back to being quiet." "What about your mom?" "Still on Earth, I guess. We were never close." By the way Rione's face fell, Lessa could tell it was a source of remorse for the captain. "Not like I was, with my dad or my grandfather." "Is he still around? Your granddad?" "He died of Borin syndrome when I was 16. "Well, I don't know what that is," Lessa admitted. "We didn't get much in the way of learning back home." Rione gave her a sympathetic smile. "It's caused by the effects of war. Exposure to radiation, certain gases, that kind of thing. Takes a toll.
My grandfather was a Marine, fought in the insurrection, was away for long periods of time, like my father. He was one of those larger-than-life types, you know? But Borin's, it ate at his mind and body. She met Les's gaze and gave a half-hearted smile. He didn't regret it, though. Said it was his choice. He told me a lot of things in his final years. They'd be proud of you. At Rion's snort, Lessa frowned. You don't think so? Well, look around you. I didn't exactly follow in the Forge family footsteps. Instead, I'm trailing behind all their wars and battles, picking at the bones of their leftovers and selling salvage to their allies and their enemies. Honestly, I think they'd be appalled. Well, I think you're being too hard on yourself. You have a real nice ship, a good business, and you're not too bad a boss either. Rion smiled. Thanks. I know for a fact that if you hadn't picked us up, Nika would either be working the mines and probably sick by now, or he'd be lost in the guilds. You gave us a home. You didn't have to do that. Lessa chewed on her bottom lip and once again focused intently on her fingernails. I'm glad to have you two on board. Rion's smile was sweet and grateful and caring, and Lessa wanted to crawl under the control panel. Her throat went thick. She'd always wanted someone to look at her like that, like they gave a damn. But now that someone had, it hurt, because it brought to the forefront the lack of any kind of love or attention she had growing up on Alaria. Is everything all right? Rion asked. Her defenses flared to the surface. Sure, why wouldn't it be? Well, there it was. The perfect opening to talk. To finally gain more of a personal relationship with the captain. Lessa was burning inside. Burning to tell someone about her past and the things that had happened to her back home. The horrible things she'd done to survive and to protect Nico. It was getting harder and harder to hold it in. And when the moment was right there in front of her, she panicked and turned coward. I don't know. You tell me. Rion countered with a curious tilt to her head, her dark eyes seeming like they could see every tiny horror on Lessa's conscience. Is it Kip? Lessa blinked. What? Her face went hotter. Rion let out a soft chuckle. Never mind. Just maybe don't go rushing into anything. There's time. Provided Kip doesn't jump ship, we're all going to be stuck together for a while. It's worth the time to get to know someone. Well, I don't. I mean, he's older. Not that I don't find him... Ugh. Just shut up, Lessa. She covered her face with her hands and groaned. I'm so embarrassed now. A light blinking on comms saved her from sinking into a deeper well of mortification. I think this is for you, she said, noting Nor's call sign. You start asking around about a Covenant destroyer, and things might go bad for you. Nor said from behind her desk after Rion gave the Kigyar a vague summary of events on Aero. Trust me, I know. You might just... She made an exploding motion with her claws, the sharp talons flicking outward. Disappear. From the privacy of her quarters, Rion sat back in her chair and studied Nor's avian face. Is that a threat, Nor Fel? She asked. Even though she knew it wasn't. She just liked to ruffle the old bird's feathers. Nor's yellow eyes narrowed as she leaned closer to the screen. Is fact. Dangerous times, you know this. Vestiges of the Covenant everywhere. Pirates, smugglers, marauders. All want big guns. All searching the systems, building armies. Rion paused, mulling over how she wanted to play this. Aero was a bust,
I lost credits on this salvage. Salvage you pointed me to. Intel I paid good money for. It's not good business, nor giving bad intel. The Kig-Yar leaned forward again, her beak nearly touching the screen. So close, Rion could only see the outside corners of Nor's eyes. Rouse's intel, not mine. And it was good. You found your scrap, no? Found it and lost it. I paid you. You sent me to Rouse. I went on a pricey trip for zero return. I lost my grav carts and tools in the process. Someone sold away my intel. Rion's look turned calculating. Time to watch the fireworks. Maybe I should just ask for my credits back. As expected, Nor's shriek vibrated the speakers and her feathers shot straight up. The image wobbled, a blur of beak, plumage, and flashy accessories as the Kig-Yar's heavy fists slammed down upon the desk. While Rion didn't think Nor or Rouse would have double-sold her intel, she wanted to get under Nor's skin, to light a fire and gain some information if she could. And the number one thing that got under Nor's skin was having to dole out a refund. Once the Kig-Yar had even a single credit in her possession, giving it back was tantamount to torture. Look, I'll forego the refund, Rion finally said, in return for information. Good information this time. Nor rearranged the glass beads hanging around her neck and righted a few shiny rings on her fingers. Not dealing in destroyers. Already told you this. I don't want the destroyer. I want what's inside it. And it's not a weapon. You know me. I don't deal in the heavies. You do this for me, and I'll be in your debt for a change. This seemed to make Nor very intrigued. No refund. No refund. I know your network has access to old Covenant intel, military history, records, transmissions. I want to know where the Radiant Perception ended up, if it was destroyed. Where it was scrapped. Anything at all. Nor thought about it for a moment, and then bowed her head slightly. Just this once, then. Next time you suck up your loss like a big girl, huh? I will be in touch. The transmission ended, leaving Rion without the opportunity for a comeback. Damn bird, she muttered, sitting back and biting her lip as she thought things through. Radiant Perception couldn't have simply disappeared. A CPV-class heavy destroyer would have been an integral part of the Covenant fleet. Given the date, it was highly probable that the ship was part of the first wave of Covenant forces that had begun humanity's destruction with Harvest, and continued on, creating as much devastation as possible. Any number of things might have happened to the vessel, but there should be a record or a mention somewhere. A ship that size didn't just fade into oblivion. As Rion turned off her screen and sank back into her chair, she mentally prepared herself for the most likely scenario to come from all this. Nothing. While the chances of finding out what had happened to Radiant Perception were decent, those of locating it intact and with the buoys still on board, were astronomically low. But then again, her dad always said Lady Luck was on their side.
One more, Daddy, please, she begged, with tears stinging her eyes. But she wouldn't cry. She was tougher than that. He always called her his tough little lady, and she had to live up to the pride she saw in his eyes whenever he said it. Besides, crying always made him sad, always made that flash of guilt come into his eyes. And she never wanted her daddy to feel bad. Ever. And especially not in the short amount of time they had together. All right, kid. One more. You deal.
She parked her elbows on the kitchen table and regarded him with a narrow look. Loser deals. He laughed at that, the lines around his eyes crinkling and his grin deep. She wanted to crawl over the table and throw her arms around him and beg him not to go. But she wouldn't. So it was all